heavily veiled and draped in silk, still tending to the large fires that burned in the metal brazier. The fire leaped and blazed up along the hearth like it was a live creature, but it gentled whenever her hand drew near.
"What is your sacrifice?"
I had come prepared this time. From my hair I drew the metal hairpin I had so loved, the one Lick had first picked for me. The sapphires sparkled in the gloom, bright against the darkness.
"Throw it into the fire."
Sadly, I watched as the fire wrapped itself around the jewel until it disappeared from my sight. The oracle stirred, her head inclined toward my direction.
"You saw the dragon," she said. "A mind from which three heads sprout."
"Yes." I wondered if she would ask me why I had not come sooner, but she did not.
"They believe that you turned it away. They believe that you have sent it fleeing from Ankyo."
"Yes."
"You did not."
It was a difficult question to answer, seeing that it wasn't phrased as a question at all. "No, I did not."
"Why?"
I lifted my head.
"Because my mentor is dying. She has never told me this, but I know she is.
She has spent her whole life chasing these demons and has nothing to show for it but her failing health. She will not stop, and she has resigned herself to an early death. She refuses to protest her fate, so I am doing it on her behalf. If there is another way to tame these creatures without Dark Asha giving up our body and soul, raising and killing Deva for the rest of our lifetimes while the years tick by, then I will do it. Not just for her sake, but for mine. And for every other Dark Asha that will pass through these chambers. I believe that the Azi is the key to her salvation and to mine. If I keep it close, then I might learn how." I felt chastened by my outburst almost as soon as I said it. For all I knew, the Oracle might tell the Association everything I said. But for one instant, through the sheerness of her veil, I could have sworn she smiled.
"Come back to me when you have taken two familiars," she said. "One that lives and another who has never known life. You may leave."
The crowd cheered again when I stepped back outside. The blue smoke behind me, testament to my success. And for their sakes, I tried to smile.
"There is something you want to ask me," she said. "You lied. The Tauri frolicked among the waves, ignoring us. You sent me that dream on purpose. You summoned me here. I did not lie. You only assumed what you wanted to see. But why? I have never met you before in my life. Why did you call for me?" "Because your reputation precedes you, Bard. Because you once had a girl you loved, who loved a bricklayer." I felt cold. "What does she have to do with anything?" "More than you think. You know what it feels like to be betrayed by the law, to be betrayed by a society that was supposed to protect you from harm, not a society responsible for your grief. She died, didn't she?" "Yes. By her father's own hand." "Yes." Waves crashed against the shore, the remains of the water pooling around my feet, gathering dust and sand, before sweeping them back out into sea.
"Why?"
"He said she dishonored him by running away. The only way he could salvage his honor was to kill her, because every day that she lived was only a reminder of her betrayal. The sun baked us with its heat, and still I shook. He killed her, and they said it was lawful and justified, and they let him go." The girl laid a comforting hand on my shoulder. I chose you, she said quietly, because you know what it feels like to want revenge when they kill the person you love. So do I.
26.
To my mortification and to Mistress Parmina's delight, I found that I had been booked solid for 3 straight months the day after I had made my debut.
Ula showed me the book she had been working on at my request, not very happily.
I never make mistakes, she said stiffly. And if that's what you're implying...
I hastened to mollify her.
Absolutely not. You've been Mistress Parmina's accountant for years, and I trust you. But I'm a new Asha. How could I have no free evenings until early winter?
Ula shrugged.
I only do what the mistress tells me. You should be happy, Lady Tia. Not all Asha are requested for as frequently as you have been. At this rate, you'll be number one for the next few months.
When entertaining at functions, an Asha is charged for every hour that she spends with her guests. The mistresses of the tea rooms keep track of the Asha who arrive every night, as well as the length of time they stay in an official ledger. The next morning, a representative from the Asha Association visited each tea room and took these tallies. Accountants like Ula would then note down how much an Asha had made that previous night, and then send a bill to the Chahana they visited. The Ashaka then takes a hefty commission after that. More if they had invested heavily in her, like Mistress Parmina had done with me. And the remainder becomes the Asha's wages. But unless the Asha was away from Ankyo for a lengthy period of time, the Ashaka traditionally held their money for them and managed their tabs with shops in the city, so the latter could charge them for any purchases their Asha made. At the end of the month, the association would announce who had earned the most money for their Ashaka, to encourage competition. I was glad that people took an interest in me. It would go a long way toward paying what I owed the Valerian, and the quicker I could work off the debt, the better. But I was appalled by the idea that I would have no rest for the better part of nearly 4 months. The only consolation was that my dinners with Prince Kantz and Counselor Ludwig were unaffected by my new schedule, Mistress Parmina being clever enough not to distance the Valerian from either noble.
This is a very good start to your career, Tia,
the old woman said almost dreamily as she looked through Ula's records.
I don't see how you can complain.
But I'm already overworked. I'm not sure I can juggle my lessons and go to these functions at night and still keep my health. I think I should be scaling back on meeting any more guests after...
Oh, really?
Mistress Parmina's voice took on a flintier edge.
Are you saying that your history lessons are all you need to know about the world? That you are too good to meet with royalty, and people of all kinds, and learn more about their culture, their kingdoms, through their own words and habits? That you think you would be able to go out into the world and interact with no more than the books you've read instead of the people you've met? To go to parties may seem like an odd fancy to you, little girl. Oh, I am sure that you will enjoy yourself from time to time. I have seen my share of parties when I was your age and had my fun. But if you think an Asha can live by lessons alone, without the support of the powerful kingdoms that surround Kion, then perhaps you should return to your novice lessons until you think otherwise.
I opened my mouth. Closed it. She smiled at me. A large, gumless grin.
Now go and prepare for your party. And no more backtalk.
She browsed through Ula's books again, a beatific expression on her face.
Didn't I tell Michaela that she would be such an asset to the Valerian?
She asked Ula. And I was almost sure she believed her own words. It was surprising to find how easily things fell into patterns,
how a schedule that had at first overwhelmed me could become a matter of course in just a few weeks. I worried that I would be too exhausted to manage, but I wound up adjusting better than I had thought. Life also had a way of balancing out. I now met with Instructor Ka only 4 times a month for my meditation class. Some of my other lessons had also been scaled back. I still had singing lessons once a week to keep my voice from getting rusty. I was expected to do my own research when it came to the guests I met in the evenings, but no longer needed history lessons. My dance classes and fight training remained as grueling as ever, but cutting back on the other lessons helped me focus on them better. I was approaching second tier in combat, and everyone seemed happy at how things were progressing. Lady Michaela tired easily, and when she couldn't teach me as often as she wanted when it came to my rune lessons, Instructor Hami took over. While she couldn't draw the dark, she had mentored enough dark Asha to know enough to guide me, and her sense of magic was strong enough that she could pinpoint any mistakes I made. I wasn't allowed to take part in runic exhibitions with the other Asha because I couldn't wield elemental runes, but I could now participate in standard combat sessions with those more skilled than I. My first opponent was a lithe young girl named Tella, who was as deadly as she was pretty. 5 seconds into my fight, I found myself knocked to the ground by a well-placed kick that left me stunned for several minutes. I never even saw her move.
"Always strive to do the unexpected," she told me kindly, extending a handout to me to help me up.
"I think it's a bit difficult for me to be unexpectedly half a foot shorter, weigh no more than 90 pounds, and have a mean right sweep," I said.
And she laughed. Tella was first tier, as it turned out, and, despite her youthful good looks, also 10 years my senior. I could beat most of my other fellow combatants, but I knew almost as soon as my name and hers were paired up that I was in for a hard time. Instructor Hami knew this. She called our names together frequently. I had the same trouble with Kaelin. I received more bruises from him than from all other opponents put together, including Tella. But he still never once offered any word of encouragement and only pointed out my mistakes. He never made small talk, and left as soon as our sparring had finished, always leaving me feeling both irritated and useless. There was one match where I caught him off guard. I was tired and cranky after nearly an hour of non-stop sparring, but he was unrelenting.
"Is this the best you can do?"
he taunted, delivering a swift blow to my shins, forcing me down on one knee.
"You're not good enough, Tia. You won't be good enough. You're only going to get the prince killed."
He'd never used the prince to insult me before, and that triggered a sudden spurt of rage, and with it, a rush of energy. I ducked to avoid the wooden blade about to strike my shoulders, dove to my left, and threw my sword at him. He was quick enough to deflect the blow but didn't expect me to tackle him about the knees, sending us both to the floor. I rolled to my left and scrambled to my feet. He did the same. From across the bamboo mat, we stared at each other. "I won't," I said once I had recovered my breath. "I'll be good enough." He looked at me, and for a moment, I thought he might say something. But he only gestured at me to begin again, and the fight resumed like it had never stopped. Fox came to watch, and often competed in his own matches against other Asha, and also against a few soldiers of Empress Alex's army. I was amazed at his skill, at how quickly he could take down his opponents.
"I need to be strong enough to protect you," Fox said simply after I had pointed this out. "I knew you weren't going to like me fighting, especially on your behalf. That's why I didn't tell you I joined the army. It's not just about me owing you my life. It's about being a brother. You're not going to cry, are you? Your eyes are getting misty."
"Shut up," I said and hugged him. "Your match is starting. Go beat the crap out of that other guy."
"Yes, ma'am."
I laughed, ignoring the guilt bubbling up. I was keeping secrets from Fox,
and though I knew it was for his best interests, I didn't like it one bit.
I promised you information, didn't I? Let me run through my list. There's been a nasty spate of sleeping spells in Tresea. It's gotten hold of a few of the nobility, so I assume it's not natural. Politicking being a cutthroat business everywhere. But that's not something you'd be interested in, I suppose. There have been sightings of the Ozzy at the Odalian border. The man I got that information from claimed he'd seen it rise from the lake. I tailed it out of there as fast as he could, considering he's 80 if he's a day and stricken with gout.
We were at one of the smaller rooms of the snow pyre, and the quiet darkness lodged within my head stirred with discomfort. Is there any way he was mistaken? The Heartforger glared at me.
I can read heart's glass better than you.
I'm sorry. It's just that the Death Seekers have been looking all over for it.
The Forger cackled.
The average Odalian won't talk to authority, much less Death Seekers. They're just as much afraid of them as they are of the Ozzy. Not one for Asha and magic, the typical Odalian. Got too many things to hide themselves. More than likely you won't be believed. Your old Asha are as stubborn as they come, and they will never believe that you know better than they do. They dislike me even more to give credence to any news I bring. But your three-headed dragons hiding in Lake Stripnik in Odalia. I'd stake my reputation on it.
I planned my escape that night. In my quest to listen to her tale, I had neglected to realize my own danger. A lifetime of stories was not enough payment for what I knew she would ask me to witness. For the only reason she would raise such monsters from their graves stood out to me as plain as the sky was dark. The beasts slept outside the cave, black, misshapen outlines against the heavy twilight. There was no sound save that of the waves lapping at the shore, the rush of tides as they ebbed and flowed back into the black, unforgiving sea. I was terrified at first, fearful that one may wake without the influence of their mistress, but I wrapped what bravery I had left into my soul and walked on, making no sound as I made my way through the sand, away from the dark Asha and her creatures. She found me a mile from where I began. She sat beside the grave, its polished stone bright despite the dim. Fear gripped me, and I stood stock still, waiting, certain she would kill me for my betrayal. "You misjudge me," she said before I could say a word. "I compelled you to come here, with the blue moon as your guide. I admit to that." She carried something under her arm. It was the sapphire-hued bezoar of the Indar, the bezoar that discerned truth from lies. "But I swear on this grave that you were never under any obligation to remain. You only needed to ask, and I would have granted you safe passage anywhere you desired." The three-headed dragon on her hua gleamed at me, their bright eyes remonstrating. The blue bezoar shone radiant and true as she spoke. The girl pointed toward the east. "When you reach the end of the beach, you will find a path leading out into the plains. Follow the road you see there, and it will take you to the borders of Tresea 20 leagues out. Or take the road on the left, and several days will find you in Santiang, though I would advise you not to linger." "How do I know that this is not a trick?" I dared to ask. "What proof do I have that what I choose to do is not from your compulsion?" "This is how you know." The strange blue moon blazed to life above us, as bright and as magnificent as the day. At the same time, I felt my feet move through no desire of my own, forcing me back to where the girl sat staring out onto the sea. "Stop." I stopped. The girl drew out a small pin from her hair and pressed it into my hand. It gleamed like ivory, plain save for its strange silver sheen. The peculiar pressure in my head eased, and the blue moon faded from view. One of the strongest spells is woven into this hairpin. It will prevent anyone else from directing your thoughts. Keep it close by you at all times, and not even I can command your actions. If you still wish to leave, then you are free to do so. If you wish to stay, then I will tell you more. Look at this bezoar I carry, and see that I do not speak false. And she held out that blue stone, which continued to glitter like gems, proving the truth to her words. Thank you for the company, she said gently. The girl walked back in the direction of her cave, leaving me to make my decision alone. The Deva woke before the sun rose again the next morning. I watched them frolic among the waters like children at play. The girl sat atop the Taurvi and smiled at me when I approached, wearing her pin on my shirt. I am glad, she said.
27. The loss of 20 Death Seekers came as a blow. We learned of this 2 weeks later, long before the royal messengers came trickling into Ankyo, armed with grief. We learned of it when the silk merchants arrived, pale and trembling, speaking of the heavy black smoke that moved across the Odalian landscape like an angry storm. We learned of it when the wagons returned from Neve, from refugees fleeing the carnage that ravaged the small towns littering the borders of Kion. We learned of it when the Heartforger and Kalad returned to the Snowpyre Chahana, both grim and sober.
It caught them unawares,
the old man said.
Went through the troop like butter. They died before they knew what was happening to them. A blessing, if you can call such a death by that word. Looks to me like you've been made Asha at the right time, Tia. If there is no more fortunate time to draw in the dark, it is now.
I remembered it again when an old woman came through the doors of the Valerian and begged me to raise her son from the dead.
He's barely 20, m'lady.
She wept.
Fresh off his training, only to be sent off to die. You can raise him from the dead, can't you, m'lady? That is what they say. I have no other sons for my old age. I beg you.
Could only stand there, numb, as she was gently guided away, still sobbing, by two of the many soldiers that took to roaming the city for a sense of security that no one believed, with the whole of Ankyo tensed in expectation of a war they did not know for sure would ever come. Not for the first time, I plumbed the depths of my mind, seeking for answers in the strange presence curling up at the furthest corners. I had sensed nothing wrong until the horrible news had come, and I was desperate, wondering if I should have investigated further. But the Azi's mind slipped easily away from me, and all I could find was darkness. I looked at Fox, and we did not need our bond to know what he was feeling or for him to know what I was feeling. I found Polaire waiting for me among the ruins of the graveyard some time later, where 20 new headstones now stood out among the older tombs with their pathetic shininess.
No,
she said. I didn't say anything. But I know what you plan. When Lady Michaela was as young as you were, she thought to do the same thing. It will kill you, child. Raising 20 men at once is not the same as raising one brother. You do not have a seeking stone this time to amplify your powers.
But I do! My hand went to the small stone I still wore around my neck, beside my heart's glass. I was grief-stricken. I was angry.
The forger shaped it to protect you, no longer to draw strength from. And even if you could, you will draw in too much and take in the dark rot, and we will have to put you down all the same. The Seeking Stone is gone. It is too dangerous in anyone's possession.
Mickey has done all she could to save your life.
Do not repay her by dying for the sake of 20 men.
Later that day, a new contingent of Death Seekers, Kaelin among them, left Keon to join their surviving brethren in Odalia.
You have barely served your 3 months as an official Asha, and now you seek to know better?
Mistress Parmina was in full fighting form. Less about my safety and more about my inability to take in money if I were to take a leave of absence.
Asha, who have been at it far longer than you, are frequently denied leave. What makes you think you would be any different?
I know where the Aussie is. I said it quietly, but the effect was immediate. Mistress Parmina sat up straighter among the cushions, and Lady Michaela, recuperating in bed, opened her eyes.
Are you sure about this, Tia?
My sister asked me gravely. I chose my words carefully, for my heart's glass could have betrayed me. When I first confronted that dragon during the Darashi Oyun, I saw into its mind. I could sense how it felt, and all it knew was a desire to go home. And home for it was a boundless lake of black salt.
That's a good description of Lake Stripnik,
Polaire conceded from her perch beside Lady Michaela.
But you could be mistaken.
The forger confirms it. The old man had permitted me to inform the mistress of the Valerian of his assistance, but I thought both Alfie and Polaire counted as honorary members, if nothing else. His sources also report that it hides inside Lake Stripnik.
Even if he is right, Lady Michaela pointed out. And he often is. What makes you think you would fare better than a squad of Death Seekers?
Because dark runes are weak against it. Because I have a better chance at taking it down than 20 Death Seekers. Remember the Darashi Oyun.
Nearly all the Asha in Ankyo present, and still it escaped us.
You're throwing away a lot of lives when you don't need to, when all it would take is one of me.
Lady Michaela took a deep breath.
That is dangerous thinking, Tia. We are the only two dark Asha in Keon.
I can...
The Aussie took too much out of you,
I interrupted her.
Please, Lady Michaela. I love you like a sister. I really do. But you brought me here to help you. To send Deva back to their graves. And I was scared at first. Even resentful. But now I see how important we are. I'm ready. I'm willing. I survived one Deva.
I have more experience dealing with the dark now than all the other Asha combined. Except you.
Everyone has trained me for this. Let me show you what I've learned.
You still have a duty to your patrons, Mistress Parmina said. You cannot abandon your responsibilities. Not when you have been booked months in advance.
Asha asked to be excused from entertaining patrons for official duties all the time, I pointed out. I'm sure most of them will understand.
I'd come prepared, placing a stack of papers in front of Mistress Parmina.
I asked Ula for an accounting of my record. As I have been working at least 6 hours every night for almost 3 months without taking an evening off, I've earned 3 times what an average Asha might make in a year. Despite the substantial debt I owe the Valerian, I have almost repaid it. All I ask is to take some time off to hunt the Aussie
and as soon as I return, I will work another 3 months. Please think of this as a small investment in my future, Mother.
I could practically see Mistress Parmina's mind calculating the amount of money she could make, the fame I could bring,
the price I command for entertaining guests, already exorbitant, would shoot up. Behind her, I could see Lady Michaela smiling at my ingenuity, though not without reluctance.
Very well, the old woman said. I will give you a month's leave. No more, no less. But if the Aussie is not at Lake Stripnik as you claim it is, then you are to return immediately. And you shall no longer waste my time with any more of these foolish wild goose chases.
That was smooth, Polaire murmured to me after the old woman had left the room, still clutching at the papers. You struck her where it would hurt the most, at her purse strings. This is too dangerous, Lady Michaela objected. I should go with you. If something goes wrong, it would be good to have another dark Asha with you.
Absolutely not, Polaire returned. You're still too weak to travel. You need another year's worth of rest, and the only sure thing to come out of traveling with us is that it will take longer for you to recuperate. I don't think your presence will help us in any way, not in the condition you're in.
Us? I echoed.
Naturally, I'll be coming with you, little idiot. I'm at the peak of health, and I could use a leave of absence from all those parties myself. Alfie would come if she could, but Princess Inessa is fond of her, and her role as protector isn't as easy to take a leave of. Shall we get to packing?
Polaire had spoken too soon. The Ashika Association had approved our request for an audience, but it was the only thing they were willing to grant.
Absolutely not,
one of the old women thundered. Mistress Hestia of House Imperial. Her heart's glass glimmered burgundy and teal, Mistress Parmina's slight regarding the falling leaf Chahana still rankling her.
We deny your request to leave for Odalia. The Death Seekers have agreed to assume this responsibility, and it is no longer our concern.
There are 20 of them dead in Odalia, Polaire said, who had volunteered to speak on my behalf.
Counselor Ludwig was with me, and I had hoped his presence would help sway them to our cause. We stood on the very same stage which I had danced and sang for them on. The same stage where I had refused to burrow into their minds to take a silver hoop off a piece of string above my head.
And there will be countless more if we don't act. This is not a common Deva, mistresses. This is an Aussie, the most powerful of the Darkspun. Not even the 5 great heroes have ever defeated it, and its lair remains unknown to this day. It is a reclusive beast that goes out of its way to avoid humans, but its sudden appearance at the Darashi Oyun indicates some new evil at work. It must be neutralized as soon as possible. That will require the talents of a Dark Asha, not a Death Seeker.
Death Seekers are aware of the risks they take, whether they face off against an Aussie or a tiger cub, a monster or a human. All the rulers of the 8 kingdoms have agreed that this must be left up to the men. They are prepared to sacrifice their lives. We are not prepared for you to do the same.
But why? Isn't that what I'm here for?
My bitterness echoed through the large chamber.
Yes, but at a time of our choosing. You are still too young and too inexperienced to handle a Deva of this magnitude, and to send you to the Aussie is tantamount to suicide. We have not invested this much in you to send you off according to some foolish whim. Perhaps when Lady Michaela is well enough.
That was the last thing I wanted. But I have faced it down before, and I can do it again. I understand that there are risks, but you must agree that even places like the Willows can be attacked. If I am safer here than I would be anywhere else, it would not be by any large margin.
If there's a chance we can find the Deva, then it's a chance I'm willing to take.
Foolish girl!
The words rang out in the deserted hall.
Do you now know better than us just because you wear an Asha's hua? You are 15 years old. Still a child. We have been here far longer than you have been alive, little girl. We have survived worse years than you could dream of. And we will continue to flourish. Return to the Valerian, and rid your head of such idiocy. And you too, Polaire. I am surprised that you would allow this waif to convince you so easily. What idiot put such thoughts into your heads? This idiot did,
Counselor Ludwig said with unnatural calm.
And I wager I speak with more experience than the lot of you put together. The longer we delay this hunt, the more casualties we will incur, and it will not bode well for the rest of the kingdoms. Our enemies are crafty and find solace in subterfuge. They will not be intimidated by this show of strength, which will give us nothing but a foolish waste of the Death Seekers at our disposal. They believe the news will leave us in disarray. We must take advantage of their presumption to strike when they least expect it. The faster we take down the Deva, the faster we seize back the advantage.
We are aware of your reputation, Counselor Ludwig, was the cold reply. However, you have no say in Ankian affairs, and even less within the Willows. Isteran politics is not our politics, and you must allow us to handle all Ankian interests in our own way. Sometimes I just want to throttle them. Polaire fumed as we exited the building. Fox waited for us by the entrance. Judging by the look on his face, he had already gleaned the association's decision from my mind. They care for nothing outside of Kion. All they want is to save their Ashaka and their reputations, and not necessarily in that order. I was despondent. I had thought for sure that I could sway them to the urgency of our request. I presume they rejected your offer. Zoya was still garbed in black, still in mourning for her friend, Brigitte. She was paler than usual, and for once wore none of her acerbity for all to see.
And what does that have to do with you?
Polaire asked, wary. Zoya shrugged.
I'm not stupid. I can make a guess at what happened inside. I could have told you that they would refuse your request and spared you the energy and the time. I also know that you all are not the type to give up so easily. Whatever you're planning, I want to be part of it. It's better than staying here, with little else to do but wait.
What do you think?
Fox asked Polaire.
We do need all the help we can get, she admitted reluctantly.
That's an understatement if I ever heard one.
The old man dug at his right ear with a finger.
I've had dealings with these crones before, and quite frankly, I'm not surprised. They're not ones to admit when they're wrong, even when they are.
What do we do now? I asked him.
You have two choices, the way I see it. You can abide by their decision, retire to your Ashaka, wait for word of any other battles, and hope they find that Deva without incurring further casualties. Or you can sod off whatever they think and leave anyway.
Polaire, Fox, and I looked at each other. We didn't need to voice our thoughts aloud to know what we had decided.
You're not being honest with them,
Fox murmured as we returned to the Valerian.
You're not doing this just out of the goodness of your heart.
I'm not doing this because I want to risk my life. I'm doing this for Lick, and I'm doing this for Lady Michaela. When I defeat the Azi, they'll make much of me.
and I can build my influence, enough to use the elders as leverage. I can force them to accept Lick into the Willows and to have some control over Dark Asha affairs in the Willows. Soon I could be in a position where they can no longer refuse me. Fox only shook his head.
I don't think they'll change their minds even then, Tia.
I'll make them change their minds if I have to. My brother looked quickly at me, and I softened my tone. Not that way, of course, but I'll find some other means. He nodded. He said nothing more, but I wonder if he had sensed that, if only for a few seconds, I had truly meant it.
Please reconsider,
Prince Kant said as Khalad carefully extracted a memory from my heart's glass.
Surely there are other alternatives to choose from.
I'm sorry, Your Highness, but I'm the only one who can do this.
I thought I told you to call me Kant.
He smiled, but his heart's glass thrummed with worry. His eyes were still the same bright emeralds, and his face still maintained that solemn bearing even as he stood, smiling, to greet us. Khalad kept a straight face as he gently drew out my memory.
It is a hard reality to accept, Kans, but she is the most logical choice, despite her youth. The possible sacrifice of one life outweighs the lives of your other soldiers, or of a city if the Deva continues its rampage. I'm already worried about Kaelin. I don't like the idea of putting Lady Tia in any more danger. I have half a mind to report your intentions to my father or to the elders.
I froze. Will you?
As much as I want to, I won't. I promised to tell no one, Lady Tia.
He reached over and squeezed my hand.
But it's your turn to promise me something else. I want you to come back safe and unharmed. If it's a choice between saving your life and letting the Ozzy get away, I want you to choose the first. Swear on it, Lady Tia.
I promise, Prince Kantz. And if my heart's glass flickered pink for the briefest of instants, it was only Khalad who saw.
She was paler, more wan than before. The price of carrying 4 Deva on her shoulders, with 3 more to come. But her hands did not shake as she stoppered 2 more of the vials, and she showed no hesitation as she drank them down. She tossed the bottles onto the sand behind her and stepped out into the waters toward the bones. She summoned the Indar first. The blue bezoar broke in her hands, and the skeleton above us moved. It gained shape quickly enough, a hawk-like beast with a gnarled beak and a loud cry that ripped through the air, the sound shrill. It had paws instead of talons and a bear's body, made of neither fur nor feathers, but of something in between. It shook itself dry and then took to the skies, exploring for several minutes before it remembered its mistress. It landed on the sand before her and bowed its head in acquiescence, as had the other Deva before it. The Akvan came next, and it was every bit as grotesque as I remembered, with its protrusion of elephant tusks and its massive trunk. It trumpeted at the sun, no longer gutted and eviscerated. Its tail thumped at the ground behind it, kicking up sand and soil. Their black hearts glittered in the air. The girl took them both and pressed them against her own heart's glass. And screamed. She toppled to the ground, writhing. I ran toward her, but just as suddenly, the spasms ended as they had begun, and she pushed herself up with one hand, breathing hard. Even the Deva showed their concern, turning toward her with high, piping sounds of worry. She raised her arm when I took a step toward her, concerned. I'm all right, she insisted. All I need is a little rest, a chance to catch my breath. What is happening? As Dancing Wind once gave part of her heart's glass to bring back Blade that soars, So do I give part of my heart's glass to bring back these Deva. It is like knives going through my soul. You don't need to do this, I implored her. There must be some other way. She laughed. Did you think I would do this if there was? She closed her eyes and took a deep breath. I will rest for a while and tell you more about the Azi, she said. And then I will succeed. Or I will die trying. There is no middle ground.
28.
What the hell are you doing here?
Was how Kaelin greeted us. We found the band of Death Seekers gathered near the lake's edge, setting up camp. The sun glided across the water, sinking past the horizon and turning the sky into a menagerie of pinks and oranges. The creature was close. I could sense the alien presence in my mind grow stronger, though the sensation coming through from the other side of the bond was sluggish.
We thought we could all use a vacation,
Polaire informed him glibly, sliding off her horse. I did the same, patting Chief lightly on the nose and digging into my pockets for a small piece of sugar. Being dead didn't stop Chief from enjoying his share of sweets, and he munched on my offering with gusto.
Do the elders know that you're here?
Would that make any difference now?
Kaelin glared at us, and then relaxed.
I suppose not.
Who's in charge?
Zoya demanded.
Austria is. Gerald died, and Nargol is in no shape to lead us anywhere.
Take us to him, then. We need to talk.
Well, hi there,
Austria said as we approached the center of the camp. He had a bandage around one eye. Five other Death Seekers displayed similar injuries. He grinned at me.
You've traveled a little farther out than the tea rooms of the Willows, Lady Tia. I don't mind the company, although this is not the best of circumstances. On the bright side, I see double of everything, and two of you look just as lovely as the one.
This doesn't look good,
Fox said, surveying the rest of the wounded.
How many are indisposed?
A dozen brothers, and they're the lucky ones. We've taken our most seriously injured to the town of Lizzet to recuperate. It's a day's ride away, so they should be safe.
I caught a glimpse of his silver heart's glass, reading its pattern of erratic greens and yellows.
You need to lie down, I told him.
I'm fine. Alsrun changed my bandages only an hour ago.
Bandages don't do much for concussions. We'll need to get you some ice and a clean cloth.
There are some fresh strips in my pack.
The Death Seeker's fingers moved, and a small block of ice materialized on the ground beside him.
Will this help?
And I forbid you to draw runes for the next several days. Let someone else do it.
That might be harder to do, little lady.
He winced when I pressed the ice against his head at a spot that still looked swollen.
As long as that damned Ozzy is out there, I make no guarantees. It's taken out too many of my pals for me to relax.
We heard,
Fox said.
Do you know where it is now?
Austri gestured out at the lake.
As far as we could tell, it hibernates during the day and comes out at night. We don't know if it's still there or if it's hunting somewhere else. But the sun's setting, so I'd say you're just in time to find out. Which is unfortunate. How did you know we were here at Lake Stripnik? We'd only figured out its location the night before, and we just dispatched a messenger a few hours ago.
We have our sources,
Polaire said mysteriously.
Tia here seems confident she can take it on.
Zoya nodded at me.
I say she's an idiot, but that's an argument for another time, seeing that we have little choice.
What the hell are you girls doing here?
Alsron demanded, approaching the campfire with several other Death Seekers.
Saving your derriere,
Polaire said sweetly.
Tia, will it sense you if you try to search for it?
I don't think so. The dragon was as used to my mind as I was used to it by now, and my nearness caused no alarm, as far as I could tell.
Do you know where it is?
It's inside the lake.
That was quick,
Zoya remarked.
Did you know where it was all this time?
I've been looking for it before arriving at the Death Seekers' camp. I strove to keep my heart's glass serene, slowing down my breathing so I would not arouse further suspicions. Sometimes I forgot how perceptive Zoya was.
Any ideas when it's going to surface?
Zoya asked. I don't know. I think I can goad it out if I have to.
It's more likely to remain in the lake than venture out.
The man shrugged.
It's only surfaced once, to our knowledge. You know what happened next.
He gestured at the line of wounded.
It attacked us somewhere between here and the village of Int.
How did this happen? Polaire demanded. You've all faced down Deva before. I'm not saying we've never come away unscathed, but to hear of 20 other Death Seekers dead? This is the worst number of casualties that I've heard of.
Seems like it's evolving. Studying us. We were not as effective at the Darashi Oyun as you might think. We were barely able to protect ourselves, much less injure it.
From his position on the ground, Ostri grimaced.
Fire, hurricanes, quakes, as many arrows as we could put into its scaly hide. Hethal even tried to freeze it. All he got for his troubles was a spike through his heart. We couldn't do much after that but grab the bodies of those who'd fallen and retreat while we still could. It fled, and we tracked it here. I suspect it doesn't want to stray too far from the lake. It would be best if you girls returned to Ankyo. There isn't much you can do here.
Polaire shook her head.
We have to try. Tia, you'll be the one facing it head on. What do you need us to do?
I rose to my feet. I would need a handful of Death Seekers nearby, just in case. The ones who aren't injured. I want the others as far away as they possibly can be. I can feel it somewhere underneath those waters, and it feels like it's hibernating. If I'm to seek it out, I have to wrest control before it's fully awake.
There are 6 or 7 of us with but a few minor scratches to our name,
Kaelin said.
There's a good chance you'll have about as much success as we had even if you draw in the dark. And if I were a betting man, I'd stake money that there's a powerful faceless out there, meddling.
Choices require risks,
Zoya said.
Start evacuating your wounded. They won't want to be here when the fighting starts.
You're going with them,
Polaire informed Ostri, who was trying to stand.
I can fight,
the man protested.
Spare me the heroics, Ostri. We've been in this long enough for me to see through your conneries when you start spouting them. Who's next in command after you?
I was the 5th in line, you know. We haven't thought that far ahead.
Kaelin, which of your brothers can remain behind to help us?
Terence, Andres, Kingston, Levi, Fargut, and I.
That gives me the seniority, then.
Lady Polaire, I don't think...
I'm placing you in charge of the remaining Death Seekers, Kaelin. But you're not in charge of me. In the absence of any other senior brothers, I can assume command.
But you're not on official business from the Council. And regulations state...
Kaelin trailed off at the look on her face.
Gibbons has a broken arm but no head injuries. I can put him in charge of the wounded.
Smart decision. Fox, help the rest of the brothers get to Lizzet.
No,
my brother said.
Where Tia goes, I go.
There's not much you can do against a Deva, Fox.
That's not important. I'm not going to go off to safety while Tia remains behind. And if there's one less thing you need to worry about when I'm involved, it's putting an extra life in danger.
Polaire paused.
True enough. I keep forgetting that. Keep Tia out of trouble.
Tia is already in trouble, Zoya murmured. So are we for disobeying the council, for that matter.
Keep Tia out of more trouble, then.
Are you sure about this? She asked me in a softer whisper as the other Death Seekers began making their preparations. We're treading in unknown territory, and I'd hate to die on a maybe. The runes may not work, but I can still sense it. And I was able to control it to some extent back in Onkyo.
I hope you know what you're doing, Zoya said from behind us.
As I recall, you insisted on coming, Polair pointed out.
It's never too late to regret things.
Can you still feel the Ozzy? Fox asked. How long do we have?
Not very long, I think. I could feel it slither along the edges of consciousness. I think it could wake in another hour's time.
No sense in delaying, then. Move faster, people!
Polair ordered.
Injuries don't give you an excuse to be here once the sun goes down.
There were more wounded than I had thought. As I watched a few of the Death Seekers borne away on improvised litters, I couldn't help but shudder. Fox laid a protective hand on my shoulder.
I'm not going to let anything happen to you, Tia.
I love you, Fox. But Polair is right. There's not a lot you can do for this fight.
Enough to drag you out of here if things take a turn for the worse. Kicking and screaming if I have to.
Despite their previous assertions, even the other Asha showed signs of nervousness. Zoya kept scanning the waters like she expected the Ozzy to rise at any instant. And Polair chewed on her fingernails at intervals, realized what she was doing, and firmly brought her hands down, only to bring them back up to her mouth again after a few minutes. Are they going to be all right? I asked Kaelin as we watched the long line of injured Death Seekers begin their journey to Lizzet.
Let me be blunt, Lady Tia. I'm doing this under protest because Polair commanded me to and because she's my superior. This does not make us friends.
What did I ever do to you?
I demanded.
We barely see each other enough for you to hate me. You tell me not to see Prince Khans and expect me to kowtow to what you want without telling me why. Whatever you think about me, you at least owe me an explanation.
He glared back at me, but something in his expression wavered, like he wasn't sure how to phrase it.
I know how you feel about Khans.
He finally said. I felt like a hole in my stomach had opened, and my heart had plummeted right through it.
What?
That first night at the party, when you raised those dead rats.
He looked down at my heart's glass.
You've been pretty good at hiding your emotions since then, but not that first time. Asha aren't the only people who can read heart's glass. It's not mandatory for Death Seekers to learn. But it's a good skill to have.
Why are you telling me all this?
Because I thought you were just another inexperienced Asha with a schoolgirl's crush. I've seen enough girls throw themselves at him, and I can see the early signs of infatuation. But then you raised those rats, and I realized you were a lot more than that. I've spent almost all my life protecting Khans from danger, and I knew you would put him there from your presence alone.
Connery's, I said.
What?
That's what Polair says when she thinks someone's talking out of their ass. You're right. I do like Prince Khans. But I've tried my best not to let that get in the way of my duties as an Asha. And I never intended to let him know, much less do anything about it. You talk about being able to read my heart's glass, but you forget that I can read them as well as you. Even better. You lied just now. He paused.
I don't know what you mean.
When you said that you thought I was just another inexperienced Asha, your heart's glass flickered. You knew I was a dark Asha even before Zoya and her friends told you. And then realization dawned. You knew who I was as soon as you saw me that first night at the Falling Leaf, didn't you? But when? He stared at me,
and I watched as his heart's glass shifted color from a dark silver to a deep blue, and then back again, before